Amote, this is Joe Palca, VOA News.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Hundreds of Zimbabweans traveling back at the end of the year are stuck at the borders of South Africa, Botswana, and Mozambique, unable to provide valid COVID-19 negative certificates required for entry.
That's Addie Gando reporting for VOA from Harare. Details coming up. Also, the UNHCR renews its appeal for access to Eritrean refugees in Ethiopia's Tigray region. And civil society groups in South Africa want officials to reintroduce a ban on alcohol. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The UN Refugee Agency remains concerned about the fate of some 96,000 Eritrean refugees in Tigray, many of whom reportedly have fled their camps and are unprotected. The UNHCR renews its appeal for access to the refugees, which Ethiopian authorities still have not granted, despite an agreement to that effect with the United Nations. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
It has been nearly 1 week since the Ethiopian government agreed to allow unimpeded, sustained, and secure access for humanitarian supplies to reach those in need in Tigray. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has repeatedly appealed to Ethiopian authorities, including Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, to live up to their agreement, but to no avail. The UN Refugee Agency reports the humanitarian situation is becoming increasingly critical the longer fighting goes on. Those most at risk, it says, are internally displaced civilians and some 96,000 Eritrean refugees in camps close to the combat zone. UNHCR spokesman Baba Baluch says his agency has received worrying information that many of the Eritreans may have fled their camps and may be widely dispersed in the region and beyond.
We have reports of refugees looking for food and safety in Mekele and other areas inside Tigray. We also have reports of Eritrean refugees reaching a location called Gondar in Amhara region, and we are also assisting some of those who have reached Addis Ababa.
Many of the Eritreans fled to Ethiopia a decade ago, seeking refuge from persecution and forcible conscription in the Eritrean military. The UN estimates 2 million people in and around Tigray need humanitarian assistance, and some 1 million people have been displaced by the fighting. The UNHCR reports nearly 50,000 refugees have fled to eastern Sudan since Ethiopian troops began their assault on Tigray November 4th. Baluch says the number of refugees arriving in Sudan recently has gone down to an average of 400 to 600 every day, down from a high of thousands per day a week ago.
There are concerns about refugees who want to leave and flee and seek safety in Sudan and may have been prevented. Refugees who are arriving are reporting increasing number of checkpoints, very hard for them to reach, but they're still making it to Sudan.
Baluch notes the Ethiopian government's telecommunications blackout since fighting began in Tigray continues, making it very hard to know what is happening there. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The Borno state government in northeastern Nigeria has commenced the relocation of about 3 million internally displaced persons affected by insurgency to their natural homes. A top official of the state says there are 800,000 people in each of the several camps located in the state. Babakura Jatau is the commissioner of information in Borno state. Jetau spoke to reporter Mike Mbonye about the relocation of the internally displaced persons. He says adequate security has been put in place to protect people being sent back to their homes.
Well, we have several camps. In each of the camps, there are several people who stayed there temporarily. As I did earlier mentioned, there are over 800,000 people in Munguno alone. Any of the camps that you have within Maiduguri, I don't think if there are any camp that you can go and find less than 100 to 150,000 people. So totally about close to 3 million people have been displaced, still being in the camps. And that is why the state government is keen on returning them to their ancestral home, because it is not sustainable to be feeding that large number of people on a daily basis. Once, if they get back to their areas, they will pick their pieces and then begin to live a normal life.
How many camps are being used to shelter affected Nigerians?
There are several camps within the state capital. You have IDP camps located, as I did earlier mention to you, at the Teachers Village, at the Bakassi camp, at Muna, at the Dalori camp. And there are also scores of IDP camps scattered all across Jere local government, like the one that you have about close to Al Medina too. There is also IDP camp equally within the Bolori general area. And some other places out of Maiduguri, like Munguno that I did say earlier, there are also camps also located in Bama, Gamborungala, and some of them are also located within some of the areas where people are returned back to their ancestral homes.
The Borno State government has commenced relocation of people from camps to their natural homes. How many have been relocated so far?
So far, the state government has successfully relocated people back to Baga. They have relocated successfully back to Kauri. There are also people who have been returned to Dikwa. There are equally Dombwa. We also have recently in Goda local government area places like Ngoshe, Krawa, Pulka, Ashigasha, Warabe, and Limankara. And also, within the Borno Central, you have people that were returned to Kauri, like Ajiri, in Mafa local government area. In all, there are several communities that were hitherto camped at various IDP camps within the state capital, but almost over 50% of those IDPs that we had in Maiduguri are back to their ancestral homes.
What about the safety and security of people relocated, given the incident at Zabamari village on November 28?
Well, before the state government returned those IDPs back to their ancestral homes, all the necessary security measures have been taken into cognition. There is no way you can return those people and leave them at the mercy of the insurgents. So for that, there are serious and adequate security arrangements. The security arrangement includes the Nigerian Army, the Nigerian Police, the Civil Defense, the SSS, the civilian JTF, the Hunters, and the Vigilante Group. All these security apparatus are there to give them cover so that no unwholesome incident occurs. Without God, since the return of those IDPs back to their hometowns, that we have not recorded any major incident as far as the breach to security is concerned.
Was Babakura Jatau, Borno State Commissioner of Information. He spoke with reporter Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Maiduguri, Nigeria. Hundreds of Zimbabweans are stranded at the country's borders and in neighboring countries as officials in Zimbabwe deny entry to travelers who cannot provide a negative COVID-19 certificate. But activists say the cost of a COVID test is too high. Adigando has the story.
Hundreds of Zimbabweans traveling back at the end of the year are stuck at the borders of South Africa, Botswana and Mozambique, unable to provide valid COVID-19 negative certificates required for entry. Border officials say 230 Zimbabweans at the Ramokobane border post in Botswana are facing that challenge. Botswana's health minister Edwin Tikoloti insists that his country is not going to allow people to visit without a valid COVID-19 test. At Forbes border post between Zimbabwe and Mozambique, 531 Zimbabweans also failed to produce proper documentation. There were 38 and 41 such cases also at Nyamapanda and Victoria Falls border posts, respectively. 314 Zimbabweans were also left stranded at Chirundu border post with Zambia. Immigration officials are raising issue with some of the certificates which they say appear fake, resulting in the detainees being turned away. Zimbabweans traveling home are required to present a negative COVID-19 test not older than 48 hours. The test costs $60 in Zimbabwe and 850 rand in a private laboratory in South Africa. Ngabuto Mabena, the president of the Zimbabwe-South Africa Association, which represents Zimbabweans working and living in South Africa, says the cost of obtaining the COVID-19 certificates is too high for many Zimbabweans, leaving them at the mercy of criminal opportunists.
We also we've also raised the concern with a number of public transporters, the buses, that are asking people to acquire coronavirus certificates from them. In Johannesburg, they go for 500 rand. In medical practitioners are charging 850 rands. So with people with very little monies in their pockets, they are forced to buy the coronavirus costing at 500 rand. This then opens to people who then buy these certificates without doing any medical checks.
Mabena says an urgent intervention by authorities is required to help migrant workers in neighboring countries as well as thousands of Zimbabweans who make a living as cross-border traders.
We are calling on the government to intervene both in South Africa and in Zimbabwe so that the coronavirus testing is affordable to the majority of the people. So we are proposing that the coronavirus testing must be lowered so that it is affordable to the majority of people.
Sonini Dube, a socio-political analyst, says the economic situation in Zimbabwe has made matters worse.
Considering that most people are in the informal sector and there was no government funding or government cushion for such people to be able to survive throughout lockdown. So obviously, once borders are open, people are going to do anything and everything to get through to the other side, try and make a living. However, I think it's a very irresponsible way of doing it, because it means, really, what is the point of getting a fake COVID test at the border, mingling with all those people, and then you manage to cross to South Africa and you go and watch your stuff, only for you to come back and be sick and then die?
Two and other analysts say cross-border traders and migrant workers face a number of challenges, including lack of proper documentation such as valid passports. The price of obtaining passports is now out of reach of many Zimbabweans, whilst the government says the provision of passports has been seriously affected by increasing applications and foreign currency shortages. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo in Blamayo.
Next story is also from Zimbabwe, where clouds are heavy with rain in most parts of the country. Preparations for yet another farming season are underway. Zimbabwe has in the past few years experienced food insecurity. Now the rains bring renewed hope for a change. Reporter Kuzaiza Nawashi reports.
Larima Vima, the Minister of Midlands Provincial Affairs, recently gave an outlook of the rains this farming season.
The Meteorological Services Department has predicted a normal to above normal rainfall season. We are therefore anticipating a bumper harvest in most of the areas of the country.
But farmers are worried about more than the rains. Justin Mutasa is a tobacco farmer and bemoans the high price of farming supplies, such as seed and fertilizer.
Fertilizer, which is a key element in both tobacco and maize, a lot of people will not be able to buy those bags of fertilizer. That's a fact. The prices of the inputs there are quite high. They are very, very high. You reduce the acreage and buy those which you can afford, and it is going to affect the production in long term. So that in the long run is going to affect the yield per hectare.
Dr. Shadrack Makombe is the president of the Zimbabwe Commercial Farmers Union. He says farmers are in a fix this season.
Most of these commercial farmers who are standalone were expected to do it by themselves. Surely they are between hard ground and a rock. They don't have the means. And as a result, if there's no government intervention or some interventions coming from somewhere, as much as we are going to have the rain, we are not going to produce as expected.
Dr. Enshas Masuka, the Minister of Agriculture, explained the government's efforts to protect the farmers from expensive inputs.
As government, we are planning on two programs for cereals. The first is the modified presidential input scheme, commonly known as FOMPOSA, where we are targeting 1.8 million rural households.
He adds that their target has since been revised to about 2.2 million and that 2.1 million households have been trained to take up types of farming where very little machinery is needed. The other government program has targeted 290,000 hectares of maize to be planted. So far, 285,000 has been contracted. These programs have made inputs available to farmers. Mavima says farmers ought to spread risk by also growing small grains that do not need much rain or fertilizers. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
Some South African civil society groups are calling on the government to reintroduce alcohol bans as COVID-19 infections and deaths spike around the country. With about 815,000 infections and more than 22,000 deaths, South Africa is the epicenter of the pandemic on the continent and the 16th most affected nation globally. Darren Taylor has more from Johannesburg.
The festive season is approaching fast, and for many, it's a time to celebrate and drink alcohol. But officials in South Africa fear this could result in an increase of alcohol-related hospitalizations, including from violence and car crashes. During the pandemic, that means less hospital beds for COVID-19 patients. The government recently announced tighter regulation of alcohol sales in some coronavirus hotspots. But Maurice Smithers of the Southern African Alcohol Policy Alliance says this isn't enough and restrictions should be tighter, especially around Christmas and the New Year.
All on-consumption outlets should close at 6 p.m. That means that people cannot go into the night drinking, especially in the late hours of the night. That is the time that the most damage is likely to be done.
Smithers says recent police raids have shown that many bars and taverns haven't even got hand sanitizers on premises and are showing flagrant disregard for people's health.
It's better that they don't drink in on consumption outlets and rather drink at home, where they can continue to celebrate with their families and people who are close to them, but not in these large super spreader events.
South African Liquor Brand Owners Association chairperson Sibani Mngadi agrees that some bar owners aren't complying with safety measures. So he says his group is taking action to make sure the defiance stops.
We have provided 30 million rand for procurement of health supplies. We are also providing, particularly for those districts, the team of patrollers who are going to help police to ensure compliance amongst traders in those specific problematic areas. And I think
Mngadi says reintroducing the kinds of alcohol restrictions seen at the beginning of the pandemic will be a final nail in his industry's and the South African economy's coffin.
We need to balance the economic interest, which is protection of the million jobs that are supported by this industry, the income that comes in terms of business activity, as well as excise tax that we contribute. We contribute something like 57 billion in various taxes to the fiscal. So there is that element that we need to protect. At the same time, we are very conscious that we are facing a serious, serious health problem that we need to contain. All of us cannot afford a national resurgence of cases, as well as the pressure on the health system.
Smithers says South Africans, like many others around the world, are forgetting that we're still in the middle of one of the biggest health crises in history. In that context, he maintains, we cannot live as we once did, and we certainly cannot drink alcohol like we used to.
It's very important for people to realize that if we don't sacrifice now, if we don't forego some of the normal ways in which we celebrate over the festive season now, some of us may not be around at the end of 2021 for that festive season. They're saying that the ICU units in all the private hospitals around Durban are full. So there is a serious problem happening, and our concern is that what government is doing at the moment, it's being reactive, not proactive.
Reintroduce more stringent alcohol restrictions now, says Smithers, not after parties attended by hundreds of people spark thousands more infections. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Wood and charcoal burning account for 50% of household energy consumption in Senegal, contributing to air pollution and deforestation. To reduce ecological damage, an association called Nbede, which means trees in Wolof, the predominant local language in Senegal, hires villagers to produce biochar. Estelle Njanjo reports from Dakar.
Half of Senegalese households rely on wood or wood charcoal. To combat air pollution and deforestation, a cooperative of women produce biochar, an energy source made from straw. They burn it and mix the charred straw with clay and water. The end result is a carbon-neutral organic charcoal that does not involve chopping down trees. The mixture is pressed and stored, resulting in about 150 pallets of biochar per day. The initiative is diversifying the economy of a rural region where many eke out a living from livestock and fishing. Mariama Kamara is head of the local's women cooperative. She used to chop trees in the forest, but now biochar production provides her a sustainable job. She says that first of all, this biochar protects the forest. It protects their homes. It protects their supplies. It protects women. It protects the forest that no longer burns. It protects their lives. It is healthy, she said, and thanks God for this. Biochar production has been launched in 18 villages in the region by the Nbede Ecological Association, a name that means tree in the Wolof language. To fight deforestation, the group also plants trees in big cities and small villages alike. Since the beginning of the year, they have planted more than 1 million trees throughout the country. Nbede director Jean Gop says that putting straw to good use has an added advantage. Straw, which is the raw material of our biochar, says Gop, in fact creates thousands of bushfires across the country in dry season. So reducing this straw reduces bushfires and therefore saves young trees in the forests. He says that consuming 1 kilogram of straw charcoal, we save the forest twice. The benefits can be seen in Senegal's Djilo Forest, patrolled by ranger Biram Ging, who was born nearby. Ging cannot arrest those he catches cutting down trees. Rather, he reports infractions to local village chief. Ging says rising delta waters have salted the land, posing an additional environmental challenge. Deforestation is caused by 1. The harmful cutting down of trees, illegal cutting by the population, he says. 2. He says there are bush fires which can ravage miles of forests. 3. The advance of salt from the sea to the forests, says Ging. The African Union's Great Green Wall initiative is focusing on the Sahel, among other regions, to prevent desertification. The biochar project and efforts to combat deforestation are vital piece of the puzzle. Estelle Janjo for VOA News, Dakar, Senegal.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wahib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.